From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, Jay Cornelius joins the show to talk about discovery-only projects. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Craft Commerce, a brand new e-commerce platform for Craft CMS. If you're a web shop that likes to create custom-tailored websites for your clients, you're going to love Craft Commerce. It's extremely flexible, leaving all the product modeling and front-end development up to you, and it's got a simple and intuitive backend for content managers. To learn more and download a free trial, head over to craftcommerce.com.
Today, we are both really excited to have our friend Jay Cornelius on the show. Jay has been making websites and software since 1998, and today is president of Nine Labs, where he works with companies far and wide to improve their products and services. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
So Jay, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Well, you summed it up pretty well. Previous to getting into the internet, I worked in the rock and roll business. So I've seen some people who we would not want to work with in today's day and age. And that's taught me a lot about kind of choosing your clients wisely and structuring things in a way that's beneficial to everybody involved in the relationship. And I really lean back on that experience a lot when it comes to providing services to people now.
Yeah, it does make a big difference who you choose to work with. I tweeted yesterday, I'm getting ready to take a nice break from work, and it's so nice knowing I have Leia. So I don't worry about being on vacation. And, you know, I couldn't say that before I found Leia as a good partner to work with.
Yeah, it's really tough sometimes.
So today we're going to talk about discovery-only projects. And I think what's important is to first define what that means and if that's even what we should be calling it. So what do you perceive as discovery-only or a discovery project?
Well, I think that name is fine. It's exactly what it is for us, is it's discovering whether or not you want to work with that client, whether or not it's the style of work that you could actually be effective in, and whether or not they want to work with you. So in a lot of conversations with potential clients, I tell people, look, it's like a first date. So we get to know each other a little bit. You get to see how we work. We get to see how you work. We can figure out if it's actually a fit and if we think we're going to be able to accomplish something together. It's also nice that it's a fixed fee. It's a fixed time frame. It's a fixed commitment. You know what you're going to get out of the end of it. And if you see some value there, then we can think about working together on something larger.
Oh, really interesting. We'll probably talk a little bit more later on the show about that fixed part and the fixed budget. But before we get into that, what types of clients or projects are best suited for a discovery project or discovery only? Is there ever a situation where discovery only is not a good idea?
There are, but they are rare.
Okay.
If you think about a lot of the types of projects that creative companies or development companies get involved with these days, there's a lot of questions that are unknown at the very beginning. And one of the things that we tell all of our clients is the wrong time to begin making decisions on a project is when you know the least about what you need to accomplish. And that's typically at the very, very beginning. There's actually a chart that we put up on our website about that that shows basically there's a risk curve and there's a knowledge curve, and they're kind of opposing each other. At the very beginning, risk is very high and knowledge is very low. So what we want to try to do is understand as much about what needs to be accomplished and how we're going to go about accomplishing those things before we make critical decisions about a project. So if you think about it, there's essentially a discovery phase of every project, no matter how you scope it and how you set a budget, that in the initial phase, you're doing a kickoff meeting with the client, or you're going through this initial phase of asking questions and gathering feedback and kind of discussing how you're going to go about doing things. And especially when you have a problem that is specific to that particular business or their challenges, there is never going to be a preconceived survey that you can give them that's going to get you all the information that you need. So we're doing discovery projects in our larger projects anyway. Most of us are. All we've decided to do is break that out into its own phase, which gives us a kind of a simple, well-defined breakpoint that both the client and we can look towards to say, okay, well, when we get this far, we can decide what we're going to do next.
Well, before we talk about like the details of what might be in that, I'm curious, why did you at Nine Labs decide to break this out? What was the business decision of offering this versus just doing the more traditional approach where discovery is part of a larger project?
So one of the things that I keep in mind is that, you know, we're primarily a user experience design firm. And so I try to keep in mind what is the client experience of working with us, because that is ultimately what we do. And if we ignore that experience, then how can we be good at creating experiences for their clients?
Mm-hmm.
So we saw that a lot of clients and a lot of projects would end up having to kind of be recalibrated after a couple of weeks or after we did some of these initial exploratory meetings. And a lot of times that would lead to change orders or updating the statement of work or having to update the budget. And none of those are comfortable conversations to have.
Mm-hmm.
So it made more sense to us to, hey, look, let's get all this preliminary stuff out of the way up front. That way, when we start on the project, we actually know what we're going to do. And another situation that's come up a couple times is we would get involved with, you know, a long-term project with a client, and about a month in, we'd realize we really just don't like working with these people. They don't listen to what we do. They're not coachable. They don't value our opinions and our expertise. And so this project is going to be a challenge for the next, you know, 6 to 9 months. And that's just not a situation I want to put the team in.
Mm-hmm.
So by breaking that out into its own piece, it enables us and the clients to determine a few things. A, is this the person that we want to work with on both sides? B, is this project worth pursuing? Do we have it scoped properly, or is there going to be some big gotcha that we didn't think about? Or potentially, is this project easier than we thought it would be?
Mm-hmm.
And are we looking at it the right way? Are we solving the right problem? And so by breaking it out into a discovery, it enables everybody on the team, both the client's team and our team, to get your heads around the problem in the right way and then decide what you're going to do next, rather than making a big commitment and then having a big oops moment a couple weeks or a month later and deciding you have to recalibrate everything and having that unfortunate and uncomfortable discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of this separate engagement, this discovery engagement, what should the client expect? Is it pretty much a one-to-one with what you would have as part of, you know, the more traditional part of a larger web project, or is it different in some way?
Well, it depends on what the client is asking from us. If they're coming to us and saying, we need to redesign our website, then the first question we ask them is, why do you think you need to do that?
Yes.
A lot of times that comes down to a different business problem. Sometimes it's about the aesthetics or it's about some usability issue that's pretty well defined. I mean, we've all seen in recent years the rush to be mobile friendly and the rush to kind of do responsive retrofits and all of these things so things will work on a phone. But often there's an underlying business goal that they have that doesn't come up in that design question. And so that's the essence of what we want to get to, is what business problem are we trying to solve? So by understanding what the business problem is, it changes what we try to accomplish in that discovery session.
Mm.
Sometimes that discovery session is really around understanding their customer better so that they can reform their value proposition. And it's not about redesigning the site from an aesthetic perspective, but changing the positioning and changing the messaging that they're using so their site is actually more effective for them. Sometimes it's a matter of, well, your real problem isn't this marketing thing that you're going through. Your real problem is that your mobile app sucks and you need to redesign the UI. So, you know, you're coming to us with one problem, but let's figure out, you know, how we can actually help the business. And the way that we've structured a lot of these discovery engagements is we actually have 14 different things that we can do, and they're pretty well compartmentalized. Everything from a usability assessment to a digital brand affinity audit, where we go and look at all the ways that people are interacting with the brand online and give the client kind of an assessment of that, to value proposition design and usability studies and persona development. So the first thing that we do when we've identified a new client or we start that discussion is try to understand what the business problem is they're trying to solve and then use the correct discovery engagement to help scope the solution to what that's going to look like.
That's interesting.
So I'm curious about those 14 different items. So it sounds like you've really narrowed down the scope of every single one of those 14 items. And then what you're saying is that once you have that conversation with the client regarding their business problem, then you choose which of those 14 applies to them. Is that your process?
Yeah, pretty much. So, okay. And that's not where we go into a room and then come out with the answer. It's a very right. collaborative process with the client. That's something that we can usually do in a 20 to 30 minute introductory call with them, where right. we basically explain the way that we work, the types of things that we can do, and it's a lot of me asking questions of them about what is it that they're trying to accomplish to see if there is a fit. If there is, then I'll say, it sounds like the best next step for you is to do one of these discovery sessions. And I think the persona development session is really going to be the thing that helps move your business to the next level. I'm going to send you some information about that. And if it seems interesting to you, then let's set it up.
Okay. So what I'm hearing, I think this answers this question I just wrote down. So you're basically talking to the client, this lead, and during your sales process to identify what that business problem is. And once that's answered, then you essentially try and sell one of these discovery projects. So there's some of this that is happening in the sales process where you aren't engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of where the discovery projects are really attractive to us and also to the clients, because they've heard in the marketplace, I need to get my website redone. And someone's told them, well, it's going to be $50,000. And then somebody else has told them, like, no, you can do it on WordPress for $2,000. And so they don't know what to expect. And so by giving them something that is pretty well-defined and void of ambiguity, it helps them feel more comfortable about stepping into a process. And from that point, like once we do a persona development project with somebody, at that point, we'll be able to advise them on what is the smart next step. Should you actually redesign your site or your mobile app? Should you work on your user journeys, for example? Or do you need to do a usability study? Or what is the appropriate next step? And we can give them a timeline and a budget for accomplishing whatever that next step is. So it's it gives them some certainty in the process and helps them feel comfortable about going into something from an educated perspective instead of just trusting whatever the fancy web people tell them.
So you've described you have like 14 different types or types of sessions that you might provide. Is there something that's always included in all of them regardless once you have engaged for this discovery process?
That's an interesting question. I wouldn't say that there's one particular thing other than like me or Brad or somebody from the team participating that's in every session. You could say that the outcomes are very similar and that typically these are done in our office on the whiteboard. There's lots of photos being taken. There's exercises that we go through. It's actually not a very screen intensive process. So we don't really look at a lot of stuff on a screen. It's really about talking and answering questions and kind of working through problems on a whiteboard. So every project is going to have some photos that come out of that. There's going to be a lot of notes taken. And then at the end of it, there's going to be kind of a summary report where we say, this is what we think the next best step is. This is what the timeline and the budget looks like. And here are a couple of options for how you might want to proceed. So in terms of the thing that's consistent between all of them is that deliverable at the end, that is the suggestion for what happens next and the notes and photos and things that come out of the exercises.
Cool. So can you actually tell us what those 14 types of items in your discovery process are?
Yeah, there's a list of them. I could look it up for you if you don't mind a little clicking around here.
Not a problem.
Well, and while you're poking around, I think it's worth introducing something to the discussion that Leia and I have been doing with these discovery projects. We almost have, I guess the best way to describe it is different levels. And it's really more of different levels of engagement with a client and as well as what they would get from it and the price points that we aim for. And so for us versus, you know, specialized discovery, you know, like your 14 different specialty areas, we're selling a $500 level consultation that comes with conference call, a recording of the call, and then a summary report. And then there's a middle level one where there's more audience analysis and brand analysis and things like that that also comes with a summary report. And then there's a more robust one that's a more, I guess, project roadmap, like the full shebang of our complete analysis of, you know, their audience, what they need, what their goals are, what we think it's going to take to get there, both in terms of the technology as well as the time and the budget. So those are our different levels. Have you ever worked with something like that?
Yeah, we sure have. And we do that to an extent. So we've got a simple proposal that we'll send out, which is essentially what you just described. And for that, we call it basically a project kickstart. So It can be a half day, it can be a full day, or it can be 2 days. And the outcomes and deliverables that you would get as a result of those sessions are dependent upon how much time we have in the session. So for the half day, it's basically a discussion. And out of that, you get a pretty broadly scoped project. The full day, obviously, you get more fidelity. And the 2 day, you get even more fidelity. So that's something that we offer as one of the kind of workshop options. So that's number one, I guess you could say, or number 14, depending on how you want to look at it. Some people are comfortable doing that, but what I've noticed is that depending on the size of the organization that you're dealing with, larger organizations, they don't really see a lot of value in doing something that's that small of an engagement. Because for them, the political effort it takes to bring in a new vendor is the same whether it's a $1,000 project or a $10,000 project. So in the budgets that they're working with, that doesn't make sense. So that tends to make sense for the smaller independent people or startups, kind of like that stuff. But for the larger work, they want something that's a little bit more defined and has a more predictable outcome.
I love what you described that as, you said, Project Kickstarter or Kickstart?
Yeah, Project Kickstart.
I love that. It's because honestly, I think, you know, the clients we talk to, discovery only or discovery, it's sort of like glazed eyes.
Yep.
But if you put it in terms of a Project Kickstart, I think anyone can connect with those terms. It's a really small thing in the broad sense of what you're giving them. But I think as a sales tool, that's a good label to call it.
No, I agree. And that's why we call it that, is that people tend to resonate with that. And it also implies that there's something that is going to come after this. So it's a setup
right.
for something that's going to come later.
I love it.
Smart.
So I have the list of things if you'd like to hear it.
Yes, please.
So consumer insights, which is basically what's important to your potential customers. And that's kind of a customer discovery mechanism where we do an empathy map and we do a couple other exercises to help them understand who their target market is. A persona development workshop, which is exactly what it sounds like. We do a value proposition analysis and development workshop. We do another one that's called Know Your Customer, which is essentially a week or two of customer research, which is bookended by the consumer insights on one end and the value proposition development at the end. A digital brand identity assessment, which is basically what do people think of your brand? What are they saying about you? In various online channels, depending on, and again, that's one that has a couple different levels. So you could do a light, you could do a small, a medium, a large. We call them something different, but you get the idea.
Right.
Depending on how intense they want to go, how many channels they want to look at, you know, how much analysis they want. There's a brand affinity assessment, which is kind of an extension of that identity assessment workshop. There's a messaging strategy workshop where we, based on what they already know about their customer, we do some marketing messaging strategic work to help them understand if they're talking to the right person in the right channel at the right time and what words they should be using and so on. There's a marketing automation kickstart, which is essentially what it sounds like. It's like, we'll help you set up a landing page and tie that to a drip campaign in your automation tool of choice. Digital marketing strategy kickstart, which is essentially what it sounds like, and help people understand what they need to be doing, which channels they should be utilizing, how to leverage certain tools, which tools they might want to use based on their budget and their other requirements. There's social media strategy assessments, a product ideation workshop, which is really popular with people who are working through maybe a new version of a web app or a new version of a mobile app, or startups who are trying to figure out what they need to build, application usability assessments. There's a overall user experience assessment where we look at whatever their app or service or website, whatever it might be, and just kind of figure out, you know, what do people think about this thing, and what type of experience are you giving people? And that really relies on our expertise and our experience of having done this for so long, because we don't really have time to get in and do a lot of objective measurements, but it sets them up for thinking about how small changes or even larger changes in the way that they're presenting themselves can have a big impact on their business goals. And then the last one is those discovery and kickstarts, the small, medium, and large engagements, where we help them figure out what project they need to be doing.
This is amazing. I've not heard this approach before, and it makes a lot of sense to me. I'm not sure if it would make sense for like a smaller agency such as Leia and myself. But then again, you know, maybe not 14, but maybe we might find three different types of buckets that might really align with the type of work services that we provide.
Yeah, of course. You do slightly different work than what we do. You're more in the development and the design space than we are. We're more in the strategic and experience design space. So the type of work that we are going to put into these workshops is not going to be similar to what you would do. But I think even for small groups, or maybe even especially for small groups, it makes a lot of sense to break things out into a smaller chunk to, you know, initially make that connection with a client and establish a working relationship with them. In a way, this is, it leverages a bit of psychology, because if I ask you for something small now, you're more likely to give me something big later.
Absolutely.
A great example of that is, you know, hey, Leia, can I borrow a dollar? And you're like, yeah, sure. And then, you know, tomorrow, hey, Leia, can I borrow 20 bucks? Right? You're more likely to loan me the 20 if you've already loaned me a dollar and it's been repaid to you.
Right, right.
I also think the thing that I'm also connecting with that I think Leia and my clients would connect with is sort of the value proposition of this, these specialty areas. I think the Project Kickstart is a really great way of introducing this, but I also think the way you described that it's a focus on, you know, your marketing or focus on your users. And so you're sort of telling them a little bit more than, oh, this is just a roadmap. You're saying, we're going to give you some focused information on this area that you really seem to need right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious, with your team, do you have your staff essentially, you have five people who always do the marketing affinity, you have three people who always do the user, I forget the one you mentioned, but getting to know the audience more, or is it all sort of everyone shares these specialties and so anyone can step into these roles?
No, there's a good division of labor based on discipline. So a good example is if we're doing anything that involves research, usability, doing persona development, you know, that's more of a UX research and or marketing discipline. So there are, you know, two people on the team that typically handle that. If it's more about branding or visuals or experience design, thinking through like interaction design, you know, that's a different set of skills. And so that's something that a different group of people handle. Our shop is really kind of divided down the line of the marketing and strategic kind of messaging, the perception of what's happening side. And then there's the more utilitarian, the UX, what you would think of as kind of a traditional UX discipline side. So the workshops are kind of follow along those lines, but there's a lot of crossover. And I guess stepping back, it's probably important to understand the philosophy of how we got here, which is I've done a lot of work with startups, and startups are notorious for chasing an idea the founder has, and he's infatuated with the idea, whether or not it's a good idea or how validated it is that people actually want that thing. And so we've seen a lot of companies who have a product or a service in the marketplace, and they've never done the fundamental research to understand what value it is that they're providing to their clients and why people care. And so then they start to struggle with things like increasing market share or reducing churn or increasing retention rates, and they don't know where to start, and they don't know that fundamentally user experience design can help them understand that. And there's a lot of things that we've learned from some of the teachings of the startup world with business model validation and value proposition analysis that align almost perfectly with a lot of the things that you're taught in kind of the basis of user experience with how people perceive problems and how they value different things that can help them get to their goals and kind of empathy mapping. And you know, some of these fundamental tools are very, very similar. So what I've done is just seen all the similarities between those things and created a way of kind of merging those two disciplines to say, look, if you want to grow your business, you've got to care about your users. And if you're going to care about your users, you need to know about these things. So let's not look at what needs to be in your navigation and how you need to maybe structure things or lay things out on the website until we understand what goal it is that your user is actually trying to accomplish. Once we understand that, then we can go through and actually do all this other work.
It seems like a lot of really discovery is about kind of challenging people's assumptions and testing people's, you know, assumptions as well. Mm-hmm. And it looks like you breaking out all the 14 different items that you can dive into to a business, that didn't happen overnight. So I was wondering, like, when you were trying to figure out what these parts were, like, how did you decide, okay, we really need to break these down into these points? And additionally, as you're going through these processes, were there any obvious mistakes you'd like to tell our listeners to try to avoid when you're going through a discovery process?
Yeah, so you're right. It didn't happen overnight. A lot of it just came from paying attention to the conversations that we were having with clients and seeing what their pain points were. You know, in a lot of ways, as simple as it sounds, it's drinking your own Kool-Aid and making sure that, you know, we sit out and preach every day, you got to listen to your users, but then do we listen to our clients? Well, we do, but I mean, do we really? Like on a macro level, we listen to each individual client and make sure that they're happy. But on a macro level, are we thinking about, you know, what is it that clients are really trying to solve? And how can we apply our skill set to help them solve that problem and actually bring more value to their business than what they originally intended us to do? And I think that's, you know, a great, great service to them. In terms of mistakes, I think the mistake is just not doing that, is assuming that you know what clients want and you don't. Another mistake is trying to do things that are outside of your sweet spot. When I'm talking to people, maybe as a potential partner to work with on projects or even a potential client, you know, one of the questions that I like to ask is, if we put all of your skills and everything up on a dartboard, what's in the bullseye? What is that thing that's like, what is that sweet spot? And by identifying that and trying to really focus on the things we do well and not focus on the things that we don't do well, it helps to shape the types of services that we offer. You notice that I didn't say anything in there about WordPress design, or I didn't say anything about doing custom application development, because those are things we don't do. And I'm not going to pretend that I can advise somebody intelligently about whether they should choose one CMS over the other. We certainly have opinions. We have strong opinions, and they're pretty valid based on our experience. But that's not the kind of decision that we want to be known for making. We'd rather advise somebody on how they should approach accomplishing those goals and then let a development vendor decide on what platform to use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like ourselves.
Like you, exactly.
You know, Leia, you know, with what Jay just described, it occurs to me we actually are doing what Jay's doing, just in a different way. I don't think we're perceiving them as these sort of initial or discovery types of engagements, but we do have buckets. We have like a performance bucket where we audit their site and take a look at the CMS and the front end and
right.
See what's happening from a performance perspective and give them recommendations on what can happen and what that would take in terms of time and money. Same thing with just a CMS look, you know, an audit of the CMS. We're not viewing those as discovery engagements, but essentially that's what they are.
Right, right. Yeah. We're doing research over what's the problem here and how do we fix it.
Exactly.
And are you being paid to do those?
Yes, yes. Yeah. We're being paid to do them. They're paid.
Yeah, and that's the big distinction is
right.
If the people who are running their own shops, who are listening to this, can take away nothing else, is don't give away your expertise for free. Mm-hmm. You know, it's cool to do like a 20-minute call to kind of screen and see if the client sounds like somebody that you want to work with. And if you feel that you can actually do good work for them, that's fine. But don't do a two-hour freebie and give them answers, because there's a distinct value to what you do. And I think that one of the things, I was actually just having this conversation last week with a guy who runs a UX shop in Dallas. One of the things that our industry has not yet caught on to is, and this is really just a matter of the age of our industry, we're still too young to have really figured it out, is that there's no kind of standards for how we approach going about business.
Right.
So when you go and you talk to one, you know, consulting shop or a design shop, you get one answer, and you go talk to their competitor and you get a wildly different answer. And so for the client to make a decision on which direction to go, it's enormously difficult. So imagine if you were trying to build a custom home and you took the same set of plans to two different builders and they gave you wildly different approaches and wildly different prices. You know, you'd have no basis to make a good decision. I think one of the advantages that we as an industry could have if we chose to do it is just kind of standardize the way we go about doing our business and just tell people, you know, there's two ways to do it. We either bill on a project basis or we bill on time and materials, and that's it. And there's no ambiguity around it, right?
You know, you mentioned at the beginning of your discussion about where the pricing and the standards fall is that you shouldn't be spending too much time giving away your expertise for free, essentially too much time on the sales process. I'm curious where the line is. You know, you said 20 minutes. I'm guessing that's just sort of a general point, but I know Leigh and I tend to spend too much time on sales. And I'm just, where do you say, okay, this is enough. It's time for you to either engage us for something or walk away.
Yeah, and that's another place where these discovery projects can be helpful, is because it gives them kind of a small chunk to commit to, and they don't feel like they're committing to a, you know, a six-figure project when they don't need to. So that's another way that this can be a good sales tool, and it's also good for the clients, right? Because they get a definitive outcome for a definitive price, and it enables them to make a better decision about what to do for the rest of the project. So in a way, you know, this thing really helps both sides by taking a step in, checking the temperature of the pool before you just jump in head first. So it's good as a sales tool, but it's also good as a risk mitigator for the client.
Right. I feel this really leads well to an audience question we got. Our friend Chris Harrison kind of asks, and I feel like this sounds so great because I feel whatever you're saying, we're like nodding our head. But the real question is, which Chris asks, is how difficult has it been to get buy-in from potential clients for discovery-only projects? And has discovery-only projects generally, you know, lead to additional work?
So the first question, how difficult is it to get buy-in? This is kind of anecdotal because I don't have any real hard data on it, but it's easier for someone to commit to something small than it is for them to commit to something large. And there's a bit of kind of having to pay close attention to what the client is asking for to gauge whether or not a discovery is the best choice or whether just to go ahead and give them a full proposal. Sometimes that's the right decision to say. It's like, you know what? You guys just, you're ready to go. So let's just, here's the whole thing. You know, sometimes that's the best choice. And then you can always dial that back to a discovery if they have sticker shock. In terms of does it lead to more work, 85 to 90% of the time it does. Because at that point, you've developed a working relationship. And if you like each other and you agree on what the next step is for the project, it's very easy for them to say, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. The times when it has not led to more work from that client in the short term is typically been because we've discovered as a result of that little workshop session that they're barking up the wrong tree, or that the budget to accomplish what they want to accomplish is far more than they can allocate to the project. So it's just been a, you know, kind of a no-brainer decision. It's like, well, guys, you know, I mean, we could do this, but it's probably not the best use of your money. So let's think about another way to do it. And those people will... We've had instances where they disappear, we never hear from them again. And we've had instances where they come back and, you know, 3 months later with a different plan and they want to attack it a different way, and that's, you know, in a way that they can get budget for. So I think in both cases, you know, at least in my experience, there's no downside to at least having the discovery project as an option. right. and leading with that option. And if people say, nah, that's not really for me, we just want to go ahead and build the app. Can you give me a quote? It's like, yeah, sure. Here's, you know, it's going to be, you know, $180,000. And it's going to take 6 months. There's the quote. And they're like, oh, whoa, hold on a second. That's too much. It's like, okay, cool. Let's just do this discovery and make sure that quote is accurate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this process of selling the discovery-only project. You know, what you were just describing is some of the conversation you're having with the lead, but something you mentioned earlier on in our discussion was that you have something you send to someone in an email, you know, check this out, we think this might work for you. Is yeah. that something that you've developed over time, or that was something you started with in order to sell the discovery-only project?
No, it's something that's developed over time. In terms of the different types of projects, the little assets that we send to people that can give them an overview of what happens and what to expect, those have been developed over time as we've identified more topics or subject areas for which we should have a discovery-style project. It started with the very basic, hey, let's do a half day or full day or 2 days to scope whatever it is that you want. And there's still that, which is kind of the generic catch-all for projects that we don't have a specific tract for. But as we've seen that some companies or clients have very similar needs, we just said, well, you know, this is the third time this has come up. Let's just go ahead and create a thing that outlines what we would do in this instance. And now we have this predefined process that we can follow. So that's been something that's kind of matured over time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's been other times where we've had several things, several clients who have had similar needs, but it doesn't fit into something you can pre-describe. So that doesn't get defined. And that mm-hmm. isn't a specific workshop that we can sell.
So these materials that you've put together, do they contribute to reducing the amount of time you spent in the sales process?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I think that's one of the things that Leah and I are really trying to shift on right now. Mm-hmm. We're in like the middle of it, is trying to cut back on our sales process by boosting resources we can share rather than spend a lot of time on the phone trying to educate someone. Is that kind of the tact you've taken with your materials?
It is. There's a couple aspects to that. One, I think that at least for the clients that we talk to, the people that I end up talking to most, they're busy people. And
right.
you know, to keep them on the phone for an hour, I mean, that's not to say that it's a waste of time, because it isn't, but it might not be the best possible use of their time or yours. I think about myself, and if somebody sends me something, I'm likely to review it like when I'm sitting at home, you know, and kind of reviewing my email at night, or maybe I'm waiting in the doctor's office, or I'm waiting for another appointment, or whatever it might be. So I want to be able to have the information at my disposal at the time that's convenient for me to consume it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that a lot of the people that we talk to, a lot of the executives and decision makers that we end up dealing with, are in the same situation. So by having a document we can send to them, say, here's the overview, here's how it works, take a look at it. If you have questions, let me know. I'm happy to hop on another call to get your questions answered. Let's set a time next week to go over what next steps look like.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is, it's respectful of their time. It gives them the information that they need to make a decision. And it keeps the door open that if there's something that they are still unclear on, that they can certainly call or email you at any time.
Right. And then from just a business efficiency standpoint, you have a single asset that you can use for an infinite number of leads.
Exactly. And not just in the sales process, like if you see efficiency gains in the execution of that as well, because now there's a protocol to follow. So customer X signs up for one of the workshops. Well, now I just send a message to the team and I say, customer X just bought the marketing kickstart.
Mm-hmm.
So now the team knows what to do. They know what welcome email to send. They know how to schedule the meetings. They know what to ask the client for. Like, everything is in place and just kind of follows that protocol. For the UX piece, it's typically a little bit higher maintenance because there requires so much interaction with the client and potentially requires a lot of interaction on the research side with the users of that product. So that process is still prescribed, but there aren't as many steps. But basically, mm-hmm. let's do the recruiting email, send out to enough people to get us users to test with. And once we do, the research phase is complete, we generate the report, and at that point, we get back with the client and move on. But the thing is, both processes are defined, so it makes it easy for the team because they know what to expect. They know what's expected of mm-hmm. them, and it's easy to communicate with the client and set the expectation on what we're going to do and when we're going to do it and how we're going to do it.
I feel like this is a really important point to underscore, especially for smaller agencies or agencies with limited resources and time. You know, Leigh and I are only this year have really realized the importance of us investing the time in these kind of materials, and it's completely worth it. You know, for exactly the things you were just describing, Jay, not only are you creating materials that can support sales processes, but you're also creating materials that support your internal processes and team project management, everything.
Yep.
Leigh and I are literally like in the middle of like the biggest slog to get this stuff done. We are just trying to crank out a lot of materials, not in a rapid fashion, but in a very intentional, focused fashion. And it's taking a lot of time, but each time we finish a material that we can use in our sales process, it's completely worth it.
Oh, totally.
It saves time in the long run. And I now have the hindsight that I wish we had figured this out sooner.
Yeah. If I can hold up an example of something that I feel that you've done well, is the prep for this podcast. Is you have all the steps outlined. We know mm-hmm. exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, what's expected of me, what you're going to do. It's a predefined process that works. You've answered all the questions. Like there's, and it makes it super easy for me to come on and say, okay, I know what I need to do. I know when I need to do it. That type of pre-describing things or creating a protocol, anytime you can do that in your business, you're going to see efficiency gains, mm-hmm. which usually leads to the bottom line.
Absolutely. So I'm a little bit curious about pricing all these discovery-only projects. So you mentioned your 14 items. Do each workshop have a fixed price and you just say, okay, with this particular project, we're going to do these two particular workshops. It's going to be workshop plus other workshop, and then that's the total cost? Or is there any variation?
The only variation is on the Know Your Customer workshop, because it has three components to it. There's 2 days with the client and there's the research phase in between. So the research phase is something that we typically have to do with most of our projects anyway. So having it up front, we actually don't charge as much as we might normally charge for that in conjunction with those other two workshops. But I mean, I'm certainly open about our pricing. We charge just basically a day rate at $7,200 for each of those workshops. Same price no matter which workshop you do. That way, if somebody knows that, okay, well, let's do this one, and then we can do this other one later. So let's start with persona development, mm-hmm. and then let's move to maybe the brand audit. All of those things come with that same price tag, same timeline, same kind of expectations on what you're going to get from us. So mm-hmm. it makes it easy for us to know what we're selling. It makes it easy for the client to understand.
Absolutely. It makes it easy for them to budget and plan as well.
Exactly.
We're making some changes to the house, and I'm gathering estimates and trying to not only plan what we're going to spend now, but what we might spend next year. And so having all of those numbers really helps me choose a vendor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So before we wrap up, let's just talk a little bit about what you do at Nine Labs after discovery only. So you've done one of these engagements. What happens next?
That depends on the outcome of the engagement, but usually we have a project plan that's got a budget, it's got a timeline, it's got a scope of what's going to be accomplished. So we document that, we share it with the client, we have a discussion about it so the client understands what they can expect from us to get their questions answered. Then it's just a matter of whether or not they decide to do it. If they do, then we start that project process. If they don't, then we say, okay, that's cool. Let us know if there's something that we can help you with in the future. And we just follow up with them periodically to stay in contact. In terms of execution, it really comes down to what's in the scope of that next larger project.
Right.
Yeah, that could be doing a bunch of wireframes and prototypes for a mobile app. It could be working on voice and tone documents. It could be any number of things.
Very cool. So any final advice for listeners when they approach a discovery-only project?
Don't overpromise. Yeah, I think it's really easy to overestimate what you can accomplish in a single day. A lot of times, what happens is people forget, like we as practitioners forget that we have mountains of knowledge that are new and not familiar to the client. Mm-hmm. We have lots of terminology that we might need to explain, that we have to take them into this process kind of slowly. I find that it helps me to draw a metaphor to going to the doctor. and they tell me that, you know, my metacarpal has a string, you know, whatever, you know, there's all these terminology that, you know, that I don't know. I didn't go to med school. So a good doctor will take the time to explain things to you. So it's very, very important to not try to cram too much into that one day. Not to say, oh, we're going to do this exercise and that exercise, and we're going to whiteboard, and we're going to do some wireframes. No, you're not. You only have, effectively, one of these things, if you book it for the entire day, you only have 6 hours together that you're actually working.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of the niceties of, oh, how many kids do you have, and where'd you go to school, and all that kind of crap that just, you know, you need that. I mean, that's important to understand the perspective of the person on the other side of the table, but real work time is pretty limited. So just scope appropriately. Try to minimize what it is that you're going to accomplish and what that, and be very clear about what that deliverable is and charge accordingly. Don't undersell yourself.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jay. But before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
All right.
Are you ready?
I'm as ready as I'm going to get.
Okay. First question, morning person or night owl?
Night owl.
What's one of your guilty pleasures?
Guilty pleasures... raspberry chocolate sorbet.
What software could you not live without?
OS X.
What profession other than your own would you like to try?
Race car driver.
What profession would you not like to try?
Those people that climb up to the top of towers to change light bulbs.
Ugh.
If you could take us to one restaurant in your town, where would we go?
Bones.
What kind of food is that?
It's a steakhouse.
Barbecue?
Oh, steakhouse. Ooh, yum. If you can meet someone famous, living or dead, who would it be?
Umair Haik.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
That one would be, I don't know, I kind of want to say mind control, but I'd rather not control minds rather than just be able to know what people are thinking.
What is your favorite band or musician?
So this one's really tough for me because I spent so much time in the music business and I respect so many different people. I think that one of the most talented bands, I mean, it sounds kind of cliche, but the Beatles, they just did so much in so many different ways and were so talented. The people I enjoy listening to most is pretty broad. The next band in the list might be Tool, might be Ahmad Jamal, could be, I don't know, there's so many.
It's like asking Leia and I what our favorite food is.
Yeah, there's just so many. Too much to choose from.
All right, last question. Pancakes or waffles?
Can I go with crepes?
Ooh, I sure. Love it. Love it. I think you're the first crepe.
Yeah, I like making them.
So that's all we have time for today. Thanks for joining the show, Jay.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
The company is at ninelabs.com, NINELABS.com. You can find me at jcornelius.com. It's just letter J, CORNELIUS.com. I'm on Twitter at JC, letter J, letter C. From there, you should be able to find anything else you need.
Great. Thanks again for joining us today. I think this was a really great discussion.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I certainly did.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Craft Commerce.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech and Devotee.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. And if you really like this episode, consider donating to the show. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when Leia and I talk about copywriting and the user experience with Stephanie Murillo.
This is Leia Alcantara.
And Emily Lewis.
Signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.